This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. Rising cost of living and food is causing many to feel the pinch, especially for non-governmental organizations which have been relying on public funding to sustain their operations to continue helping those in need. So today we want to speak to two different organizations to find out how they're coping. And first, I'm joined today by Dato' Munira Abdul Hamid, who is the founder of Pertiwi Soup Kitchen, to find out how the soup kitchen and the people that they feed are faring. Thank you so much for joining me today, Munira.
Most welcome. Thank you for having me.
Now, I'll start with talking a little bit about Pertiwi Soup Kitchen, right? So that's a project under Pertiwi, the organization Pertiwi itself, that and the soup kitchen is something that you started back in 2010. Tell us a little bit about what made you start it back then and what the soup kitchen does.
Right. From even when I was little, you know, I was so used to feeding the homeless and poor. My mom actually was doing it. Imagine, even when I was 5 years old, that was in 1955, mm-hmm. we already had homeless people in Alastair, you know. It's not just about being poor. It's just being isolated from families. It's mental illness. It's all those complications, yeah. So we used to help those who were struggling. I come from a big family. And there were family retainers, and I remember our kitchen was always so busy, and there was always extra food. And whoever walked into our compound would get food. So that was my early memory of feeding the homeless and poor. And when my sisters were among 10 founders of Pertiwi in 1967, we were doing programs not just about feeding, various intervention programs for the rural poor at the time, mm-hmm. especially for girls who are falling behind in education, just make sure that they all had a tertiary education. So it's been a long journey with Pertiwi. So when I started the soup kitchen, it's actually to help in realizing that there were more people with the rural to urban migration. And coming into the city is one thing. You may earn a little bit more than what you're earning in a kampong, but then cost of living is higher. So you're back to the same situation, the realization that you've got to match with cost of living. Yeah. So we try to help those who are struggling.
So what does the, you know, operations of the Pertiwi Soup Kitchen look like?
Okay. Pre-pandemic, it was different. Pre-pandemic, it was just like rah, rah. Volunteers come, students come, 3 or 4 busloads per night, all wanting to have an experience of what it's like. It was rah-rah, really, you know. And then the pandemic hit us. And we just adapted, yeah. I never stopped, mm-hmm. not even a day of feeding. So we adapted during the early days. We even had something that looked like a war room, you know, and it was organized by Kementerian Wilayah and all that. You know, we were going to this place. It was so scary. We didn't know who the enemy was, but we adapted. We knew that there were poor people who wanted to make sure that nobody was scared of the invisible virus. Everyone was worried, would there be enough food? It's always food that was the biggest concern, not the virus. The virus remained elusive and the food concerns remain highest. So we had a wonderful network, you know, thanks to WhatsApp. We managed to form a wonderful collaboration network, and where we could plug in and supply food. We just did. It was amazing. It was nothing about social media and publicity, no. It was reliable deployment of food and all that, yeah. Mm. But we did it. I'm glad we did it.
Mm. I mean, you've adapted in terms of your operations, you know, after COVID. But, you know, from what we've heard with a lot of other organizations as well, funding was severely impacted. Was it the same for Pertiwi Soup Kitchen as well?
We were lucky because, you know, always make sure that we've got some reserves. I am basically an entrepreneur, so I applied all that in the running the NGO as well. Make sure that we've got cash reserves and make sure where we could tap in any international funds we did. We had friends who, connected us with funds that were available overseas. It was a matter of that, yeah, helping each other. Hmm. And, of course, being an old NGO, we could give tax exemption. That helped a bit. Not much, but it helped, yeah.
Hmm. Now, I guess on top of, you know, you've managed to find that entrepreneurial spirit, right, to find ways, no matter what, to plug in those gaps. But on top of that, you know, we're now also dealing with rising food costs. And of course, more recently, there was quite a bit of panic over shortage of certain foods like chicken and eggs as well. How has that impacted the soup kitchen's operations?
Yeah, we've tried to be clever and find all the suppliers that we know of, you know, tap into all. I think we've dug them all out. And basically, that's what it's been, you know, trying to trace to the last reliable supplier and trying to find ways and means that whereby we can still keep everything going, yeah. For how long, I don't know. But we'll keep on going. We'll adapt. You know, we must.
Is there anything that I guess you're worried about looking towards the middle or long term?
There's always funding. Yeah, I'm trying to find various new ways of looking for funds. And that's always something that you have to be resourceful in looking for funding. But all I keep telling is the ad hoc group, stop duplicating, stop trying to get stupid publicity on social media, because when we are trying to stretch our assistance, we don't want people throwing away food. When you come with the intention of just trying to get the media attention, it ruins everything. You duplicate, you give food which ends up being thrown away in the bins. It's not the time for that. We find it very tasteless and pointless. And, you know, when people are trying to be sensible and go for the long haul and keep everything sustainable, there's no point in trying to get a moment's how many likes, 100 likes, 200 likes. What on earth? Do you even understand the meaning of helping? Disappointing to see. And then you give gifts. Some of them, you know, they take Grab to go all the way to the hotspots to wait for gifts which are not even relevant, not even needed. So there's a middleman there. Somebody has paid a lot for the gifts. They end up selling to the middleman, and it's all wrong. They don't even understand what it's all about.
And I guess on that note, right, how does, you know, the work that you and other soup kitchens do in providing food for those who need it help them, right? Whether, you know, they're the homeless, they're the hardcore poor, or simply struggling to put food on the table for a few meals, right?
They are scheduled. It's all scheduled. We work closely with DBKL. They're all the scheduled feeding hours. They're already the locations which are fixed. Everyone who's already receiving knows. They're registered even. They're registered for groceries. Everything is very organized. Anything that comes on top of it is just an unnecessary extra, which duplicates and becomes redundant. Everything else is very organized. It's established. They even have cards. We have their Excel spreadsheets of their names, the number of people in the families, what time they're receiving. So I said, what I'm trying to do now is migrate that all into a database, so that in the event the government wants to know exactly how much assistance we're providing daily, monthly, per family, and all that, you will have that information. but I haven't migrated that yet. I will.
Now, rising food costs are affecting many of us, right? But especially those in lower income brackets. What are the impact that you're seeing of this rising cost of this food insecurity for the people that, you know, you are helping?
Well, they're happy because we're there. You know, we're there providing meals for them. So what we keep telling is whatever little you earn now, because of course they're earning a lot less, the Airbnb and all that, none of the businesses are saving. So they're earning a lot less. So whatever little you earn, make sure you settle your rental first. I don't want you guys becoming homeless. The reason why I'm providing food, groceries, milk and diapers and all that back to school program is because I want the kids to go to school. I want the kids to be eating well. Then we've got medical service. I've got to make sure that everyone's looked after, basically. And then whatever little you earn, put that aside for rental. So we try to make sure that they can, continue to live comfortably, and there's still hope for them.
Do you see a stigma or hesitance in people wanting to reach out for help, even if it's just for food or groceries?
No, they know me already. Mm-hmm. They know me. They're all in that. You know, I have many noisy chat groups from morning until night.
But if we then look at the bigger picture, right, is there still a stigma from the public, from the general public, towards people who frequent soup kitchens?
I don't think so. They're all mixing quite freely with everyone. Because to me, I tease them all. And then, you know, I am mommy, nene, whatever, you know. I make myself one of them. So I don't pretend to be anything I'm not, you know. So when you mingle with everyone and there's acceptance that okay, it's okay, it's fine. And if I have something, you know, some groups want to bring extra food or donate something, we work with the Lost Food Project and Pit Stop Community Cafe. Mm-hmm. And then, we have all these other places as well. And then we get ice cream, you know. So whenever we get all this, we share. It's about sharing and making sure that every one of us gets to enjoy.
It's a whole network. It's a whole community there helping each other out.
It's a community thing. It's so very much a community. You know, and we're not competing with each other. We're not trying to get social media attention. We're very low-key. And that's the way it is. And that's the way I keep telling everyone.
And let's talk about some measures, right? I mean, for example, recently the Prime Minister announced that the government will be giving out extra cash aid of 100 ringgit for households, 50 ringgit for individuals. But to what extent do such cash transfers help? Or is it even reaching them at all?
They were just going back here to see that not finished. Now. Please do not misunderstand. You are in some la-di darling. I'm not impressed.
So then what measures do we need to put in place to better support these communities?
Let us work together. Let us work together. At the moment, my biggest concern are the kids who have dropped out of school. During the pandemic, they've dropped out of school. They'll never go back to school. Now, we're trying to teach them alternative education. Yeah, I know it's all very well if you teach to mengaji Quran, but at the same time, they must have skills training. You know, I mean, the long text, you know, my daughter and I were trying to figure out, why can't you guys read all the other instructions you don't? Because everyone is in a hurry. Now, and you expect young ones to read? Basically, yeah, what they need is just communication skills, the ability to do minimal counting, and to have some skills to serve the community. What they like, we just realized, barista, cooking, you know, maybe some will do a manicure, pedicure, you know. you must identify how they're going to earn a living. They've dropped out of school. Forget. Don't teach who founded Melaka. Nobody's going to be interested anymore. Yeah. What is relevant is what skills they can utilize moving forward so that they can earn a living. You know, that is life. It's about keeping them sustainable. They love doing, of course, you know, selling online, whatever. We have to make that more lucrative and easy, whether or not they're going to be delivering food. Everybody has to eat, put it that way, you know, but then also we need food to sell. We also need, they also have to, so I was pushing for central kitchen to make sure that they're cooking from clean kitchens, whereby they can, you know, prepare their food and they sell. And we have to grow that industry, yeah? And it's about making sure that everything is clean and safe.
Hmm. And so, you know, for if we come back to the work that Pertiwi Kitchen is doing, right, to support these communities in the meantime, what sort of, I guess if people want to reach out to help, you know, and what do you need at the moment to ensure that operations continue to run smoothly?
Sustainable funds. We don't take salaries, yeah. I have my own income. I am an entrepreneur, as I said. Pertiwi is volunteer run. So we don't take salaries. So all of our money goes towards whatever it is, the services that we provide. That one you can rest assured. Yeah, it is all transparent. And there are only very few who we reward with some allowance because we've taken them from B40 to help us.
All right. Thank you so much, Munira.
Thank you, Sue-Anne.
I've been speaking to Dato' Munira Abdul Hamid, the founder of Pertiwi Soup Kitchen, on how rising food costs are affecting them and their operations. If you missed any part of today's show or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can download our podcast on bfm.my or on the BFM app. I'm Lim Sue-Anne and this has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.